il corner dentro, il colpo di testa, Zapata! Zapata! Dovrebbe essere gol! È gol! Zapata! Lo dice la Goal Line Technology! Al 97esimo il Milan trova il 2-2, impazzisce la curva sud!
Hello everyone and welcome back to episode number 17 of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Oliver Fisher, and I'm joined by a man with a new AC Milan shirt slash jersey, whatever you want to call it, Anthony Torgerud.
What's up, guys? The rumors are true. I did just get a new jersey today. It came in the mail. I ordered a while ago. I just got it right now. But Hakan Çalhanoğlu, one of my new favorites. I'm pretty hyped on his performances, so I said, screw it. Let's get the jersey. I think I bought it the day that he scored that goal, and it's just been caught up in customs for whatever reason. They held it at the gate, but finally got it in and wearing it as we speak.
Yeah, you jumped on the bandwagon a little bit, didn't you, mate? Let's be fair.
I did, real quick. I was on board driving the train.
What's it like, though? Because obviously, like, a lot's made about the official ones and whether they're worth the money in comparison to, like, some of the replicas you can get. What's yours like?
So mine is one of the replicas. And for the people that are instantly in their head thinking negatively, I strictly buy official. This is my first venture into unofficial, and you could back me up on that, or you could chat this what you want. But you know, it's nice. It's a good one to like wear if you're gonna go to the park and play a game, kick around the ball a bit. You could tell it's cheaper. It's a bit thinner. The stitching isn't 100% well, but nice little, I don't know, nice shirt to wear around the house on a weekend or a lazy day or something. So I'm not too mad at the purchase for as cheap as it was.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned this before to you and to other people. The thing for me is, like, when shirts first come out, especially Adidas or Adidas, if you want to pronounce it the American way, when they first come out, you know, if you want to get a shirt with, like, printing and the badges on the sleeves and stuff, you're talking at, like, €120, so, like, $130, £100, and that is a lot of money for most people. Like, to go throwing £100 on a shirt is nuts. Like, for that reason, I'm always really protective if I ever get an official one. And I will only wear it when I know that it's not going to get damaged at all. Because I have this, I guess it's like an OCD thing about if I have a proper shirt, you know, especially with printing and with patches, it needs to stay in perfect condition. Obviously you ventured for the first time into the Asian marketplace, shall we say.
I was trying to support it, was kind the new of, owners.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. You might be able to buy some of Yong Hong Lee's companies on there soon. but we'll get into that. It's your first venture, into that kind of area. And it was kind of, would it be fair to say you're pushed a little bit by me and Isaac?
Yeah, definitely. I actually ended up on there because, funny enough, a friend told me that's where he gets his shoes from, and I always ask him, like, how do you always have the latest sneaker drop? You know, I'm not much of a sneakerhead, but my buddy is, and so I, for whatever reason, he thinks I care enough to be told the news about it. So he's always talking to me about it, and finally I found out that he's been buying replicas. He doesn't even have the real thing, so I checked it out. I didn't buy any shoes just because that I'd rather be official 100% since I had to walk on
Yeah.
and need those comfy.
The quality is important, more yeah, important.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I feel you with the, you know, you want them to stay perfect condition because I like to retire mine. Like, I have some framed and hung up, none recently that are signed because pretty hard to find the players apparently, but I have one that's signed by the 2011 winning team actually. I got Zlatan on there and all the other big names, and that's above my bed, so I feel you with the official stuff. Got to keep that in good condition.
Yeah, and like one of the reasons that I don't buy loads of shirts on these like marketplaces and stuff, but I like to get maybe like one of each shirt for the year. I think the beauty of it is that I actually feel comfortable playing football in them. So I play quite a lot of five-a-side, like we've got a league and stuff. And it's nice just to like show up every week in a Milan shirt and obviously rep the team. But also, like, you know how five-a-side is It's kind of rough and tumble.
Yeah.
A lot of physical battles. You've got guys grabbing onto you. You're trying to twist and turn. And I've had it before where I was wearing an official like Hamburg shirt. Don't ask it. It was cheap online kind of thing. But it was a proper one. And it literally, I was sort of backing into some guy, no homo, spun off him. He had a fistful on my shirt and literally ripped the side stitching apart.
Well, the good news is it was just a Hamburg shirt.
Yeah. It was a nice one, though. I kind of liked it. It was a bit tight, and I think that's the reason that it happened. I sort of bought a size down because, don't know.
It's nicer to play in the tight shirts, I think. Yeah,
that was my thinking. And since then, I've always been scared. Like, that didn't really matter to me. I mean, Hamburg are probably my preferred German team, but I'm not that fussed about them. But like since then, I've thought, if I'm going to wear a team shirt, I don't want it to get ruined if I've invested a lot of money into it. So I buy shirts like that for playing in and for wearing around the house and for going running. And because they're actually really comfortable shirts to do activities in.
You know what I mean?
Because the climber cool and all that kind of shit. So.
Yeah, but you mentioned that it was like a tight shirt, and you think that's why it got ripped. That's honestly why I'm so nervous about the switch to Puma, what do you call it, Puma or something?
Puma, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's the correct pronunciation. I think we established that earlier.
No, it's Puma.
It's German.
No,
it's whatever Puma. They want.
Yeah, but it's Puma.
Yeah, we'll get to the bottom of that. Yeah. I'm kind of worried about that. Now, we were speaking a little bit before we started recording, and I was saying that my team, as I've never mentioned ever before on this podcast, but my English team, my local team, Huddersfield, we've been Puma or Puma for a few years now. And I have to say that overall, they're probably the best kit maker that we've had, because you have to consider that maybe 8 years ago, we were nothing. We were in the third tier. We were like a Serie C club. And obviously, you don't attract the big brands. They don't want to make your shirt because they don't get anything from it, which is fair enough. We had Umbro before that, and Mitre. I don't know if you've heard of them. Mitre. They make footballs as well.
What did I think it sounds familiar. Maybe I've just always pronounced it differently. What's the logo Mitre look like?
It's just the word, I think.
Huh, I don't know.
But yeah, they're more known for making footballs, like, but they made a good shirt. So while Puma was like a huge step up for us in terms of the variety of stuff that they offer and generally the quality of stuff that they offer, this season and last season have just been awful. Like, we have no stock of anything, which is apparently Puma's mess up. The shirts have ventured so far from our traditional look. Like before, we were just playing blue and white stripes, a slightly darker blue. Trying to compare it to blue, but I don't know. Not navy, but royal blue and white. Yeah, that's how I'd describe it.
Yeah.
And then this season, our stripes are really bright blue, really bold, bright blue. But the stripes are so weird. If you're near a computer, look up Huddersfield Town home shirt 2017-18. You'll see what I mean. The stripes aren't proper stripes. They have loads of like bubbles coming off the side. And when I saw the kit, I thought, nah, this is a joke. There's no way that our first season in the Premier League, you're going to mess about with our shirt like this and not make it the best shirt that you've ever made. Since then, I think people have warmed to it a little bit.
I kind of like it. Have you just Googled it? It's very different. It's
unique. You have to understand that.
Yeah. Oh, and it's got the button too, like half collar. Yeah,
I like the collar. I like the collar. Some newspaper, it could have been the Times or something, in the UK did a ranking of the 20 home shirts in the Premier League, and they put ours at number one.
Oh, wow.
Whereas the vast majority of our fan base would have put it at number 20. Because
question.
We're a very traditional
Why do you guys
club.
Have three stars above your badge? I mean, you obviously haven't won the first division.
Yes, we have.
In
the 1920s, we became the first team in England to win the first division three times in a row. So that's we did it before Man United and Arsenal and Liverpool and stuff. In the 1920s, we were the biggest club in England, and then we've sort of been up and down since.
The Roaring Twenties, yeah, back when Prohibition was a thing, and
we were in the first division in the '70s as well. I think we were also the first club to go from the first division and have four back-to-back relegations.
Wow! Now, with it being this is your first season in the Premier League in this era.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it make sense to kind of do away with those stars or incorporate them into the crest more so than on top?
Well, if you look at the badge now, and this is kind of a visual thing, so if you're listening and you can't look at it, I'll try and describe it. We've got like a crest in the middle, which is loads of different things combined. There's a terrier on it because it's our nickname. There's two white roses in like a black band, which is because Yorkshire's symbol is the white rose, and Yorkshire is where we're from. There's a monument on there which is called Castle Hill. It's like a tower that's up on the hill near the town, and then it says our name. But that's all that crest is inside a big shield shape.
Mm-hmm.
Now that shield shape never used to be on our shirts. Before, we used to just have the crest bit, and then the three stars above, or on a lot of shirts we didn't have the three stars at all. It's only recently that we've adopted that kind of look. And I understand being proud of our history and everything. You could look at it the other way. You could be like, this is our first season in the Premier League. You know, fans from elsewhere might not have a clue who we are. And they'll be like, why do they have three stars? And they'll start looking into the club's history. And who knows, they might become a global fan. Like, I know there's loads of different fan clubs in America that have popped up for us.
Really?
Like, seriously, yeah. Which is nuts. It's nuts. People flying over to see games and stuff. It's incredible. And like, from a club that when I, my first season watching them, we'd just been relegated to the fourth division. And we needed to raise, I don't know if it was £100,000 just to not liquidate.
Oh my God.
That was kind of scary.
Just do a GoFundMe.
Now here we are. Yes, it was like that. They set up a trust basically, and then people donated. And eventually we got bought out by someone who owns the Huddersfield Rugby Club. So he saved us, but then he also then sort of turned on us a little bit further down the line. But that's a long-ass story, and people don't want to hear it, to be honest.
Speaking of getting bought out, did you see that it was, not Southampton, Sunderland, are for sale for less than Virgil van Dijk?
They're probably worth less, to be fair.
I think it was like £50 million or something for the whole club.
That's right, yeah. Their owner, Ellis Shaw, is... it's sad what he's done to the club because he doesn't care about them. And they've gone from being an established Premier League club to now looking like they're going to be in the third division next season. And who knows what will happen after that.
Yeah, I remember they were always, you know, upper middle of the table for a while there.
They historically, like growing up for me, they've always been a Premier League team. Or they've always definitely been, you know, top half of the second division. That kind of... top 30 teams in the UK, basically, which is nuts. And it just goes to show what a spell of bad ownership can do to a team. Like, I'm sure you're familiar with Portsmouth's story.
Yeah.
Going all the way down to the fourth division, just like we did in the 1970s. But they took a long time to bounce back.
Well, Parma, aren't they in the... Are they in Serie B now, or are they in Serie C? They're in B right now.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, they're on their way back. That'll be awesome.
Fair play. Yeah, I look forward to having them back. Yeah.
Better than Benevento. Love...
No, that's a good story. I like that. They're going down. They're getting relegated, but that's a good story, and I'm glad they had their 1 year. But Parma, like, no, they belong in Syria, without a doubt. So many good players have come through there, man.
Do you think if they get back to Serie A that we'll either sell them or loan them back Jose Mauri? Or do you think he would never even want to return there? Because he wasn't getting paid, correct? None of the players were?
That's right, yeah. There was a lot of problems over payment. I think he'd go back, yeah. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, for playtime, the fans liked him. I'm sure they still kept a good majority of the fan base, you know, the diehards. They probably didn't gain new ones along the way, but...
Well, it's interesting you say that. I mean, a lot of people who are Calcio fans or just foreign football fans over in this country took an interest when Parma went down into, where did they get demoted to? Serie D, essentially, in Liga Pro?
Yeah, they went all the way to the bottom because they had to completely liquidate and start from the top, or bottom, I mean.
They reform as Parma 1913 or something like that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, a lot of people were like, oh, holy shit, that's Parma. Like, the club that had Buffon and Dino Zoff and, you know, loads of really good players, sort of icons throughout the years, and that's what drew people's attention to it. And now there's quite a lot of people who are supporting the club now. They're on their way back up, which is good to see. So yeah, I'm looking forward to them being back in Serie A. I always look forward to playing at their stadium. I think mainly because we always win. But, you know, I mean, we've had some good games there, man. Like that 5-4 game was nuts.
Yeah, so, that was the opening game of Inzaghi's season, right?
Second. First away game. Yeah, we beat Lazio, didn't we, 3-1 in the first game. Menez did a madness.
Yeah, and then Menez is insane back heel Honda around the keeper.
Honda scored the first goal of the season for us, didn't he, at home? And then, yeah,
he was top goal scorer for a while, wasn't he?
We were talking about this today.
I think we were,
in the chat. He was on six goals after six games.
Yeah.
And we were thinking, what a signing.
Right, he finally came back.
The thing that got me so hyped about him was that he barely celebrated his goals. He was just like, yeah, I'm getting paid to do this. Meanwhile, we were on a charge up to like second in the league after six games.
That was kind of a fun season,
you know.
No, it wasn't. That was a fucking miserable season.
In hindsight, though, we know it's not going to get much worse than that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's bottom.
I mean, hang on. 2014-15 season, that was, wasn't it?
14-15, yep.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at the league table. We were unlucky to finish 10th with 52 points. Like, 52 points the season after would have got us 8th. And the season after that would have got us 10th. No, maybe we weren't. It feels like we were all right early in the season.
We were. We were all right early in last season, too. Weren't we fighting for second up until that game with Roma? We were tied on points, lost that, and then downhill skid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bit like into this season as well. They started off like a house on fire, and people were like, it's not going to last. No matter what you say, it's not going to last. And sure enough, it didn't. Inter only finished 3 points ahead of us in that 2014-15 season. That's nuts. Genoa finished 6th. What the hell were we doing that season? Oh dear. Oh man, we lost 12 games. Oof, that's horrible. Yeah, I'll take it back. It was not a fun season. Going back to the whole kit thing, I'm kind of excited by Puma, but I just hope that with us being one of the bigger clubs, if not the biggest club that they represent, we should get a much better training range and a much better off-field kind of thing, and hopefully a much better kit than what Huddersfield got this time round. I guess that's my point of that 15-minute rant there.
Well, I just want everyone to take note. You did just say that we are the biggest team they're representing. That puts us above Dortmund and Arsenal, and I want everyone to be aware of that because it's 100% true. Those are both feeder little baby clubs. And we are the big dogs of Puma, the big cats.
You could put Dortmund and Arsenal's trophy cabinets together and it wouldn't fit in half of ours. So there you go. And I know your mate Danny will be listening and he'll be fist pumping to that.
he just sent me a Snapchat right now. He's actually wearing a Brazil jersey. Random tidbit that doesn't matter to anyone. But now you know.
Irrelevant question here. Would you ever buy a national team shirt with a Milan player on? So would you ever buy like an Italy jersey with Bonucci on or Bonaventura or whatever?
Maybe not with a player, but I do own about 3 Italy jerseys, actually. I like to buy national team jerseys. I think they're cool. I think about it, I only own Italy jerseys. I was going to get this year's USA one, and then we didn't qualify for the World Cup, so I'm just pretending that we didn't release a jersey this season.
Same with a lot of Italy fans, mate. Don't worry. They changed their badge for the World Cup, and they didn't even qualify, man. That is so funny.
Yeah, well, it's Viola's fault. That's what happens when.
When you fake a nationality.
And your real nationality and your pretend one both don't qualify.
Oh, God, didn't he start claiming to be Spanish the other day?
Yeah, Spanish and Dutch. Oh, Viola, he's a...
Yeah,
he's
for all those of you who don't know, it's Alex Viola, one of the writers at Sempre Milan. He's a bit confused about his nationality. Isn't he? Right, so we've got a game to recap. And I say it like it's a chore, but it's actually not, because I think I said on full time, this was probably, for me, the most pleasing win of the season for a number of reasons. But first of all, beat Sampdoria 1-0 at home. Ricardo Rodriguez missed a penalty, which we'll talk about. And Giacomo Bonaventura scored with a nice volley, Calabria cross. And he managed to squeeze it through Strakosha, who had a really good game, by the way. And yeah, that was it. They basically didn't threaten until sort of the end of the game. So my statement was it was one of our most satisfying wins of the season. Do you agree?
I think it was our best performance of the season. The scoreline doesn't necessarily show that, and that's honestly due in part to Viviano just having the game of his life. I don't know if he was using his mustache handles as extra arms or what, but he was on fire. I mean, really, that's the only reason we didn't score 4 or 5 goals on him. We battered him the whole time. I mean, look at the stats. I think we had, what, 20 shots on goal? Or not on goal, just total shots. I mean, 11 corners. We were going at it. And yeah, we only got the one in, but that's all that matters. It only takes one to get 3 points. So
it reminds me kind of the Milan teams of old, where we win, not win ugly, but like the scoreline makes it out as if we made it difficult. But really, I just can't remember us being under threat. And one of the things that stuck out in my head, going into the game, I was thinking there's no way we're going to keep a clean sheet here. They've scored in their last 8 games, Sampdoria, coming into this game. I still had questions about our defence, you know, not having a dig at Gattuso or anyone, but I just felt like we're still sort of gelling with that back four. And we shut them out. We shut them out, and they didn't even look that good. What did we do that like stopped them from even getting close?
We just looked composed. We looked like a real team. We had a game plan, and we stuck to it. We were, you know, tidy at the back and then built up plays, and we didn't hesitate to, you know, make back passes if we needed to, which we really haven't at all this season. We do a lot of back passes, but I don't know. It looked like every pass, even the back passes, had meaning. People were making runs. We were creating chances. I mean, the team was hungry, and yeah, it just, I know
a reflection of the coach.
It. Exactly. We keep going back to that, but really, I mean, what else is there to say? It's thanks to him. He's turned it around. I mean, we saw the stat that came out today in the 11 games, league games that he's been in charge. Gattuso has earned more points than Montella did this season. So, I mean, that speaks volume to it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm about to say something, and I think you're gonna wince it. But watching Romagnoli and Bonucci at the back kind of reminds me of the sort of partnership that Maldini and Baresi were. Obviously, I didn't witness them much, well, at all, really, firsthand in the flesh. But like, stylistically, you've got Bonucci, who is the stopper. He's the one who wins the aerial duels. He's, you know, sort of Captain Fantastic. He's the elder of the two. He's the one who Maldini probably learned a lot from. Even though Maldini played a lot as a fullback, he slotted in at centre back sort of towards the late stages of his career, mid to late stages of his career. And I kind of see that reflected with Bonucci and Romagnoli. I get the feeling Romagnoli's learning a lot from Bonucci, but he's playing a different kind of style. He's the one who's more comfortable on the ball. He's almost like our first line of attack in many ways.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, he is a ball-playing center back, and I think I've touched on this a couple times, that he's better at getting us out of situations, whereas Bonucci's better at preventing them. And I think that holds true to him playing as a you know, ball forward. I can't even think of words all of a sudden, but a ball-playing forward here.
Yeah.
He's not even a forward. Jeez.
He's a ball defender, but we
there
understand,
we go.
Matt.
Yeah. I think that you're more prone to have to dig out of situations when you're doing that, but you're right. He's really become our first line of attack here, and we're building plays through him on that side there, getting it to the wings or whomever, Rodriguez, anyone that we need to, and we're getting it forward and we're taking the shots, and that's how you win games. You can't, the quote, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Wayne
Wayne
Gretzky,
Gretzky.
Michael Scott, yeah.
Michael Scott, yeah.
No, seriously, that's what it comes down to. We had 20 shots, we made one. If we took 19 shots, what if we made none of them? We could be talking about a draw right now. I mean, it only takes one, and the more we put on there, the more likely we're going to get it. It's interesting because it's a complete foil from the Ludogorets game last week, to where we won that game 3-0, but it really was an ugly performance. Whereas this one, we win 1-0, but it was a beautiful performance. I mean, this was a champagne football that we've been preaching about, pretending we've had for years, and now it seems like we actually had it.
Looking at the bigger picture, we kept back-to-back clean sheets in Serie A for the first time since January 2017.
I think it was more than back to back, wasn't it? It was like two or three or something like that.
I've got it as league here. What was the game before? I've forgotten. No, it was Lazio,
Oh,
was
you're
it?
right. It was
That was 2-1.
Udinese.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Yep.
So when Gattuso took charge of the club, we were 18 points off the top four. It's now 8. So progress on all fronts.
Three clean sheets in our last three in all comps. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, it was the Ludogorets game included. So we talked about it last time. Are you feeling a bit of a late charge
I am.
towards the top four?
I am. But I'm getting nervous for this weekend when we play Roma. Under is in huge form. El Shaarawy was benched today in their Champions League game, presumably to start against us. And I think he scored twice against us now since leaving. So, I mean, Roma's Roma. That's a tough team to face, especially at the Olympico, which I believe we are away, correct? Yeah. That's going to be a tough game, but hopefully we could ride this form. We're obviously not starting a lot of key players tomorrow against Ludogorets for the second leg because, well, why? We're up 3-0 with three away goals. I mean, anything could happen, but it's pretty unlikely. But I think if we don't get a win in that game, even if it is second stringers, third string players, it's still going to bring the morale down, kind of kill the hype a little bit. And I think we really need to ride this wave here and take it forward and do what we can against Roma. Can you imagine? Every team above us that when we were sitting in seventh, we lost to first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. Now we've beaten Lazio, we've beaten Sampdoria. Probably not going to beat Juve or Napoli still, but
If
imagine
we
if
can
we
beat
beat
Roma,
Inter
didn't
and
you?
Roma. Yeah,
Yeah.
that'd be huge. I mean, that's 12 points that we missed out on the first half of the season that we're taking away from direct competition for European spots. We beat Roma and we are. I guarantee we'll get Europe if we beat Roma.
Yeah. In my opinion, now we're definitely going to get sixth. We need European football next season. Like, it would be disastrous if we finished even like in the finished outside even the Europa League places. Not getting Champions League has its damages by the sounds of it, but if we start seeing a lot of positive momentum between now and the end of the season, like we have done already, then things just generally seem a lot more upbeat for the future. And I'm sure that will extend up to the ownership. I'm gonna say this to you now. If the option was there to either sign Gattuso to a new deal or get Antonio Conte in the summer, what's your choice?
I'm still undecided. I mean, the easy, obvious answer is Conte. The fanboy in me says Gattuso. But I don't have a straight answer on that. There's a lot of pros and cons to each. I also just think it's very early to confirm a coach that's not a rookie coach. He's played for, or I'm sorry, he's coached three other teams, but all small stints. This, see, I mean, he's a rookie coach in the top flight, especially with a big team like this. So, I think it wouldn't be wise to confirm him yet. If we finish in Champions League, then hell yeah, let's do it. If we finish in Europa League, then I think that's a conversation we should have and absolutely lean towards doing it. But if we finish outside of the top 10, or I'm sorry, not the top 10, that'd be miserable, outside of the top 6, then yeah, let's shoot for someone else. But I don't know. I think there's still enough time to where anything could happen in all three situations.
Yeah, this is going to sound like a shameless plug, but I wrote an article earlier this week, a feature for on the site for Sempre in Milan, with the headline, "Forget Conte, Gattuso is Milan's man for the future." I wrote it to kind of play devil's advocate, and almost sort of detach myself from the situation, jump on the Gattuso bandwagon, and try and see everything about his tenure so far in a positive light, and then kind of jump off and then, you know, form a judgment from that. And like you mentioned his history, it was interesting researching just exactly what went on. I think he's resigned 4 times from 3 jobs, which is pretty impressive. Because he resigned from one club twice
right.
and then reinstated himself the next day. He's managed, if you count the Primavera as well, he's managed, what, 5 different teams? He's 40 years old. Like, he's still learning his trade. Yes, he's come into this role on the back of a questionable managerial history. But without a doubt, you know, if it's going to work at any club early on, it's probably going to be with us, because he cares so much about the badge. And one of the points that I made in the article is that perhaps tactically he's not as advanced as other managers, but one thing that gets you far is if you make sure the players know the badge that they're representing on the front of their shirt. And I think he's got them playing that way. And once they start to play with a bit of fight, with a bit of desire, a bit of passion, they start believing in their own ability, the results follow, and then they start having fun while they're playing, and everything just becomes this whole positive atmosphere. I mean, you've seen Bonucci's interview this week where he says that we're going out to win games now rather than not to lose. And I expect us to do the same at Roma, you know, while we're at it, but he says it's all changed. I don't want to hear the word lose ever again in my career. I think that is just like the perfect summary of the Gattuso effect, TM. And yeah, it just, mate, I can't say enough good things about him. I had so much respect for him as a player. I knew he was going to make it as a manager one day, but I had question marks when, obviously, with his track record, when things started going sour, when he was elsewhere, thought maybe with his temperament he isn't cut out for a head coach job. Could you foresee a situation where he plays assistant to Conte, or do you think that just wouldn't happen?
That was an idea I kind of tossed around early on into Gattuso's stint, especially when he started doing well. At this point, I think if that was the only option he was given and we said, hey, we'd love for you to stay, but we're going to bring in this guy. He's more experienced. We want you to just develop under him. Because he loves the team so much in this club, he would do that in a heartbeat. Now, how long it would last, I don't know. I could see them having some differences, but I could also see him getting along because they are pretty similar players, you know, or players, coaches, just in their mentality. And by the way, I did read your feature today, and while I was at work, it was pretty solid. It was a good read, so definitely everyone go check it out.
Pretty solid,
some
thanks,
of his,
mate.
His better work. He usually isn't a good writer.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
But yeah, I don't think he would be happy to do it, but I think he would do it if he was asked.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned about them being similar people. I think they are similar people. It's not a plug, but one of the things that I did kind of allude to is that Conte had to start out somewhere. And if you look at his path to becoming Juventus boss, it is glaringly similar to the one that Gattuso has taken. And when Conte took charge at Juve, he was not an established manager by any means. He was not considered one of the best managers in the world, for example. And he left there as one because got the trust, the fans backed him. It's one of those where a player was an icon at a club, and for some reason he managed to sort of project that onto the field, and everything kind of fell into place for him. My argument was that a few years down the line, here we are seeing the exact same thing with Gattuso, and maybe we should just stick with him. And
now, do you think Conte's rise, the reason he did so well at Juve, could have been in part because how weak Serie A became just when he conveniently stepped up, and how strong Juve already was? I mean, that first season they won the title obviously wasn't their easiest, but it got pretty easy from there on out for them. And then, you know, obviously he went to Italy and then did pretty well. Didn't win any titles with Italy, but did well. And then won the Premier League in his first season with Chelsea, which was another great team that's used to winning. So is it that he's a great manager? Is it that he's kind of been put in these favorable situations that are making it appear so?
Really, really good question. Really good question. Could rant about this for 10 minutes potentially, but I think a bit of both. I think that if you look at his managerial history, he managed Bari for two seasons, maybe three. And then he went to Atalanta. He managed them for one season. Then Siena. Do you remember Siena? That was a lovely little stadium to play at. And then he got to Juve. I would argue that he had more of a solid kind of platform where he could gradually build himself up to his dream role, which was obviously the Juve job. He probably benefited a bit from circumstance. However, you have to remember that he took charge in 2011, and it was after a long period of Inter dominance. So you could argue that he was up against it.
Sure, but I mean, in 2011, that was our season. Inter had fallen apart at that point.
Basically, Juve, though, hadn't.
Right, I mean, they weren't the juggernaut that they are now.
No, and he took them back to that. I'd argue that his period in charge at Juventus, he took them back to where they are now. Bold statement, but
I think it's a pretty fair statement, honestly.
Well, yeah, because in 2014 is when they peaked again. Simple as that. You know, he went there. He played the 3-5-2 pretty much exclusively. Wing backs, you know, a couple of box-to-box midfielders. You know, that back line, Chiellini, Bonucci, Barzagli, they've just fucking never let in any goals. He basically turned Pirlo into one of the best players, best midfielders in the world, in my opinion. Like, we already knew he was good, but Pirlo at Juventus is different gravy to what he was with us, in my opinion. I think that's probably because he benefited a lot from having some world-class players around him. But yeah, like Vidal as well was in that team, and he was amazing then. I don't know.
Tevez.
Yeah.
One thing Juve has done very well is selling their star players and not missing them. I mean, they've been able to replace them with names that don't sound like a big name, like Tevez left and Mandzukic came in. And everyone was like, okay, well, Juve's done. They lost Vidal. Who else did they lose that season? They lost another big name. And then they won it again.
When did Del Piero retire? That must have been during Conte's reign.
No, it was before that, wasn't it?
One sec.
I'll figure it out.
Del Piero retired in 2012, so it was after his first season in charge. So he had to replace Del Piero, basically.
Mm-hmm.
When I say retire, he actually moved on. Ignore that. Right. He went to play in Australia.
Which is basically retired.
I mean, Conte made Mirko Vucinic look like a good player. Do you remember when he was banging them in?
Yeah. And he also had our boy Matri for the beginning of that too, didn't he?
Yeah. He played Kwadwo Asamoah as like left wing back.
He did have Asamoah, that's right.
Oh, man.
And then the other thing they did was stealing all the good players from the teams around them. Like, I mean, obviously Higuain's the big one, but look at Dybala's another huge one. One that kind of flew under the radar was Alex Caceres, because he wasn't good, but he was killing it wherever he was, I can't remember. And then he said, oh, well, now you don't get to play for them, and you'll just sit on the bench. I mean, they had a very strong domestic idea on how they were going to succeed, on weakening opposition. Kind of the Bayern model, only Bayern is successful in Europe as well.
It's interesting. If you have time, just look into Conte's period in charge at Juventus, and you'll see what I mean when I made the bold statement that he kind of like took them back into the ascendancy. So, do you see the mirror there? Do you see what I'm saying when I say that Gattuso could be our Conte?
Yeah, without a doubt.
And therefore, I think we need to give him patience. I mean, his first season in charge. I need to double check this. But his first season in charge of Juventus was 2011-12. He won the league in his first season. But the top goal scorer in Serie A was Matri with 10, which is nuts. I mean, they shared out the goals. They only conceded 20 goals in 38 games that season. Obviously, we finished second and we were right in the title race for a while.
Well, that season. We technically should have won that too. Had Untari's goal counted, we would have won that.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, yeah. I'd forgotten that Udinese finished third that season.
They finished third that season?
Yeah.
They played in Champions
League.
That's
messed up. They got into the playoff round.
Oh my god.
They got into the playoff round and lost to Braga on penalties. Yeah, that was crazy, man. Serie A has had some really weird seasons, though. So... Oh, and here's an interesting thing about one of Conte's first games in charge. Juventus opened their new stadium on 8th of September 2011, and they played an English team currently in the 4th division called Notts County. Have you ever heard of them?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, and do you know the story behind why they invited them? So they invited Notts County to be the first team to play at their new stadium because when Juventus first formed... I'm going to have to double check this story because I don't want to get it wrong, but basically there's something about Notts County who were founded in like 1863. They're one of the oldest clubs in the UK, but they took the players over to England or something and they had to borrow some kits and they borrowed Notts County's, and since then they adopted the black and white stripes. So they invited Notts County over, one of Conte's first games in charge at Juve, to play in this pre-season friendly to open up the stadium. They fucking drew 1-1. They put out a really good team as well. And Lee Hughes, who is like the most Brexit striker ever, scored an equaliser with 3 minutes left. So that is incredible. Great memories of that. It's worth looking up on YouTube. Just look up Notts County goal at Juventus. It's surreal. Can you imagine being a bloody fan? So, yeah. Bringing it back around. I think Gattuso, I can see the mirrors with Conte's journey. And that makes me a bit reluctant to perhaps... To put a stop to Gattuso's momentum by bringing in someone from outside. And you mentioned that... Conte and Gattuso are similar as people. Totally agree. Enforcers on the field, loved by their clubs, so far as to say club icons. But tactically, they couldn't really be more different. So that would be my only kind of hesitation about Gattuso being assistant, is because Conte is very set in his 3 at the back, 3-4-3. And Gattuso's come out and said he doesn't believe in it, basically. And he's very much a 4-3-3.
So. Well, it just doesn't work with our team for whatever reason. And I think that partially is because of how Montella decided to go 4-3-3 up until right after preseason ended for some god-awful reason. And kind of threw everyone a wrench. But that's another thing that you just mentioned there. Conte is caught up in his 3-5-2.
Mm.
Really, I mean, he implemented that. And then it just took the world by storm. He used it in the Premier League, and now that's almost what every team's using. I mean, we tried to copy it. Everyone tried to copy it. So credit to Conte for that. But Gattuso was able to recognize that, hey, we need to get back to basics. The 4-3-3 is what works for us. Let's be strong in the back and build up. And it's worked, you know. Basic formations, basic everything. And it's working.
Yeah. I don't, I mean, we've gone pretty deep into it, but I don't really want to go much deeper because I've got a feeling that this is going to be a lot more interesting to talk about, like, over the coming weeks, when we start getting close to decision time about Gattuso's future. We're doing well here. We're on 45 minutes already, which is pretty good. But one thing I do want to talk about, sort of as one of the closing subjects, one of the big stories this week was, we need to be careful what we say here, just as a disclaimer. We don't want to get into any legal trouble. We need to attribute claims. So it does sound a bit like reading a report. But Corriere della Sera, hope I've pronounced that right, reported earlier in the week that Yong Hong Lee had been declared bankrupt and that his assets were going to be auctioned off online on basically the Chinese version of eBay. Yong Hong Lee then released a statement. He denied the bankruptcy allegation in a roundabout way. Were you happy with his statement?
Yeah, and I honestly didn't think it was that roundabout. He said they're categorically false. That's it for me. We had kind of discussed this in our group chat about, you know, Yong Hong suing them. Yeah, I'm just making a message here, and I just don't think there's any grounds for it as a public figure. I think the media is protected on a lot of free speech things, especially when it comes to that. And they said, you know, their sources, they didn't say it was them making the claim, so they are just reporting it. And then the damages, you could argue that even though he says this has damaged my assets or my reputation, you could argue that there hasn't been. I mean, I don't know if any of his companies or assets are publicly traded, but we could look at that, see if anything's dropped off, any values decreased. Then you can make a case for damages. But to my knowledge, that hasn't happened. And I know with the club, it hasn't. In fact, I saw that the club's actually valued at 150 million euros more than it was when he purchased it. So I don't know. I think it's more smoke up the ass, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I really don't think it's an issue. I think everyone, I don't know, if you look at it, I mean, it's a Rome-based newspaper. Roma is about to play us on a 10-game unbeaten streak, potentially 11 after tomorrow. Why would they not want to stir something up, you know, make it easier for Roma? I don't know. It's a little fishy. The timing of it's fishy. It's whenever Milan's doing well, they're, oh, here's some crazy new rumor about our owner. And it's easy to do because we really don't know much about them because, A, it's China and they're not very public with a lot of things. So, I don't know. I think it's an easy cop-out for them, and I don't think there's any issues whatsoever. I think we should, if we're going to be talking about the team, we should focus on the team and not anything else.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he said as well, is that he doesn't want any credibility given to the news that came out, and instead he wants to focus on what's most dear to him and to all the supporters, which is the management, the growth of the team, and doing everything possible to bring the club back to the top. So he clearly writes a good statement, which is good. I don't want to go too far into it because, like I say, I don't want us to get into any kind of bother with this. Not that I think Yong Hong Lee's listening to this, but if he is, then yeah, keep doing what you're doing, mate. He doesn't actually say at any point that the claims are categorically incorrect.
Let me pull it back up because I'm pretty sure he did.
If you read his statement, since he says something about Happy New Year to everyone. I spent this holiday at home with my family. In the last 48 hours, I've seen some irresponsible news in the media that has damaged the club, my company's family, and myself. Since I bought Milan, I've faced every kind of difficulty and endured pressure. Following these rumours and irresponsible news, I wanted to create a peaceful environment around the team and society. We do not understand what purpose these rumours have, but it has now come to the point where it's damaging the club heavily, my companies, and my family. Therefore, I would like to take this opportunity to explain, hopefully for the last time, that all my personal resources are completely healthy, and that both the club and my companies are working regularly. So a couple of things that I want to pick up on.
In the statement that's on our website, posted by Isaac, and you know, stuff does get lost in translation, that last sentence there says, I, therefore, hope that no credibility is given to the news that is not true. So, to me, that's what I read, and I said, oh.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, things get lost in translation, especially going from Chinese to Italian to English, so.
I've spoken to some people who are legal experts who are not necessarily even interested in football, and they say that this is a perfectly kind of, it's a careful legal statement. He claims, just to repeat it, in the last 48 hours, I've seen some irresponsible news in the media. Irresponsible doesn't mean untrue.
Mm-hmm.
It means dangerous, basically. It's a strong allegation, but it doesn't mean untrue. He then goes on to say, following these rumours and irresponsible news, yes, it is a rumour, and it probably is a bit irresponsible of Coursera to publish it if they haven't had it verified. And they claim that they did have it verified by a Chinese government official. That's their claim. Nobody sue us, please. So, yeah, he goes on to say that it's damaging the club, his companies, and his family, which is fair enough. I understand that. For me, that was like a final warning. Here we go. My personal resources are completely healthy, and that both my club and my companies are working regularly. He doesn't say he's not going bankrupt.
But I think it's pretty well implied.
Yeah, you can look at it two ways for me. Personal resources are completely healthy. He's basically saying, not only am I not going bankrupt, but everything's going really well.
Yeah.
That it could be like a strong confirmation that everything's okay.
Well, and however, even what Gattuso had mentioned today, how we paid Porto for Andre Silva early and they were shocked about it, how all the paychecks come in advance, that, you know, he's been at a club like Crete that was having all these financial difficulties and where people weren't getting paid. So I think Gattuso would know firsthand what that looks like for a club that's about to be bankrupt. And the fact that he's getting his check in advance, to me, says that there's nothing to worry about on that end. But, you know, like you said, I guess it wasn't categorically denied. It was sort of tiptoed around, like you're saying.
That's the key thing. And in a legal sense, that makes a lot of difference. That makes a huge difference, does the tiptoeing. And interesting you mention about us paying early for Andre Silva. We paid for him with money that doesn't exist.
Correct.
That's what you got to realise. We paid for him with money that has been borrowed and not yet paid back.
I heard that was pretty close to done about, as well.
Well, no, I'm talking about the money that was borrowed from Elliot to complete the takeover. And, oh, there's no sign of it being paid back in full yet. So, they're talking about us trying to refinance the
yeah, I mean, not in full, but I thought we had already paid a good portion of it.
Yeah, but until we pay it in full.
Sure, fair enough.
We're still under high interest rates.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous situation to be in. I'm just reading on in this statement here. That sentence that you read out, I therefore hope that no credibility is given to news that is not true, and instead focus on what is most dear, blah, blah, blah. I hope no credibility is given to news that is not true. He's not necessarily talking about those allegations. He's just saying, don't pay attention to news that isn't true. So, again, he's gone in a roundabout way for me. I might Fair be reading point. Too much into this, but like I say,
you have a right to be skeptical on it.
I've had several people talk to me about this because I find it fascinating to learn about. And all of them from a legal background, including one guy with a law degree, have basically said, yeah, this is a hell of a, like you mentioned, a legal tiptoe kind of statement. I'm not saying we should be scared. I'm not saying anything like that. Maybe he just didn't say it in a categoric way. Because like you say, it can be lost in translation, or maybe he thought that by saying what he did, it was making it even clearer, like by saying his resources are healthy and that the club and his companies are working regularly. Maybe he thought that was even better than saying that he's not going bankrupt. But at no point does he expressly say that he's not going bankrupt. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I just don't like being under a cloud of any kind. Especially when it's one that could potentially end the club.
Fun tidbit, I just typed into Google AC Milan loan to Elliot, and the first link that pops up is an article on our site, so...
We're moving up in the world, mate. Hey?
Well, second place is YouTube and third is Router, so those are pretty big sites to be above, that's for sure.
So we're pretty much bigger than Routers.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
So, you hear that, listeners? We are the biggest site in the world.
Yeah. That's it. We're even bigger than Google, to be fair. So, yeah, I don't want to scare anyone because if we don't refinance these debts, which is something that which is being looked into currently, if you are to believe other reports, again, this is nothing to do with us. I just don't want us to get sued, mate, to be honest. The most likely scenario is that Elliot sells the club anyway to get the money back.
Mm-hmm.
They could liquidate assets. They could sell off, well, whatever they wanted. I mean, do you remember when we sold our bus?
We got that it was, back.
but yeah, we did. Whenever anyone asks me about that, I say, yeah, we sold it to buy a new one. Like, it seems like a fair trade to me.
I mean, we it was the exact same bus, actually, huh?
Yeah, it was, yeah. It's got a twin exhaust instead or something, I don't know. And yeah, so they'd most likely sell to the highest bidder.
That is what the Elliott firm is known for. They take teams and things like that that are kind of going upside down. They give them these astronomical loans that they feel you're not going to be able to repay. And then they obtain it and they sell it for, you know, more than what they loaned out to you, but less than what you paid for it. So I think, what was the final sell price for the club? It was like 700 and some million euros?
Yeah.
And then the loan was 303 million euros. So, you know, they'd probably get it back. And, well, probably after all the interest, you're looking at like, what, 400 maybe? I don't know how much it was. I know it was a pretty high percentage.
Yeah.
But they'd probably sell it for half a billion, maybe a little more. And now we have a new owner that can afford it on the cheap and has leftover funds. So potentially this could work out in our favor. Who knows?
Basically, if the money doesn't get paid back, then somebody's going to pick up Milan on the cheap.
Right, and I think October is the deadline.
I mean, Silvio's had to come out this week, hasn't he, and say that he's not buying Milan back.
Yeah.
I wouldn't rule it out.
Me either.
I would not rule it out. Because Berlusconi, if everything's to be believed, he has a fair stash of money.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Especially now that he just wiped himself of any wrongdoing because of those weird Italian laws that, like, I remember when the club was first bought, there was something that came out, like, some weird figures with the sale that were pertaining to previous things, but under some Italian law, and I can't remember the statute because it's irrelevant, but basically when an asset like that is sold, anything from the previous regime gets wiped. So, I mean, potentially this whole thing could have been hogwash, and it was just Silvio's way of wiping out some naughty things he's done, because we know that's what he does, so...
Oh, yeah.
Potentially, he just buys it back and continues, and now he's got a clean slate and still has the money.
Amazing, if true.
And I mean, he'd be buying it back for less than he sold it for, and there's no way he blew through a billion euros in that amount of time, so it would be hugely beneficial to him, especially with the value of the club increasing. He could sell it again and get more.
And also, in the period since he sold the club, and the period that he could potentially buy the club back, what has he had to fund? An election campaign. Mm. It all makes sense. It all makes sense, mate. So,
not to mention, we might even be in Champions League.
Oh. Duh. Bloody hell, it all adds up. I find it interesting. We're going to hear a lot more about this moving forward. I hope it's all positive. Because I do think that this management cares. I think they've put the right people in place to take the club forward. We had our growing pains early in the season, and I think we're going to have a lot more before we get to where we want to get to. But how's the old saying go? You can't make an omelette without breaking a few eggs.
Yeah, I think that is a pretty solid tone to end the Sempre Conspiracy Theory podcast.
Maybe that's what we should call this episode, the Conspiracy Theory.
Possibly.
That's it. Well, one thing before we end the podcast, I'm just going to ask you for a little bit of how do you think we're going to do against Roma, and what's your prediction, basically?
I'm gonna predict 2-2.
2-2. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're shooting more than everyone, barring Tottenham and Real Madrid. I think we're hungry. We're ready for it. But Under's in good form. El Shaarawy's in good form. I don't know if he's in good form, but he's always a safe bet for a goal against us. Mm-hmm. Plus, it's Roma away. So I think it'll be a good game. Yeah. Definitely a nail-biter, one I'll be on the edge of my seat the whole time for.
Like the game at home. That exactly. was viewed as a turning point for our season. It just didn't happen for us that day, but we played really well. I acknowledge that we're recording this on Wednesday night, basically, and obviously we've got the Europa League game on a Thursday as well, so just give us a quick prediction for that, and then I'll do my
2-1. I think we'll win that one, but I think with a lesser team, we're going to take it easier. They might get one in over us, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to fight as hard in this game as we can because we're resting for Roma, but we've already got it in the bag, so as long as we don't concede 4 fucking goals, we're fine.
Yeah. God. As Gattuso said in his press conference, we've had a 3-0 lead before, and we know how that ended.
Yeah. But this is different.
This is different.
This isn't the Champions League final.
This is different. They've got double the amount of time to do it. So it's got 6-3. 6-3 on aggregate to them, I guess.
Anything could happen.
Yeah.
We saw Barca do it against PSG.
Thank Christ we're not playing Barca. so for the Ludogorets game, I'm going to have to stick with the prediction that I put on the preview. Yeah, that's a little plug there. You can read the match preview on our site. I went 2-0 on that. I don't really see them scoring, to be honest, mate. I didn't really see enough from that first game to suggest that they can do it at San Siro. One of the factors that I think really weighed into our win away from home, as we mentioned, is that they haven't played a league game for 2 months in the build-up to the game against us. And obviously they've played one since, but now they're playing again. So you go from basically playing no domestic fixtures for 2 months to all of a sudden playing like 2 games a week. San Siro pitch is huge. I think they're going to be knackered. But I don't expect a Gattuso team to go out and just coast a game. I don't think he'd let that happen. So I expect us to go out, get a goal, maybe 2 early goals to properly kill the game off. And then just take it easy. Keep some energy in the tank ahead of Sunday, which is the big one. Sunday?
Sunday.
Yeah. And then for the Roma game, we just don't have a good record there at all. I'm always scared of going to Roma away. I watched the highlights of their played in the Champions League against Shakhtar, lost 2-1 away from home. Questionable. I think Di Francesco's done a fantastic job there so far this season, but the last few weeks they've had a couple of tough results. And I think they're starting to be questioned a little bit more by teams. You know, Samp went there and won 1-0 at the Olympico, and we made Samp look average. So, you know, naturally thinking, surely we could do the same as what Samp did. But I don't know. I think they're going to raise the game. They know how big a game it is for them. They don't want us getting anywhere nearer than what we already are. I'm going to be a bit negative, a bit cynical, and say 2-1 loss. Yeah, and I'm sorry, because that's kind of a really sad note to end the podcast. But I hope I'm wrong. Hope I'm wrong, and if we win there, it'll be our biggest win of the season, without a doubt. In the meantime, just a reminder before we end this that you can catch the preview match report, player ratings for both the Ludogorets game and the Roma game on our site, SempreMilan.com. We'll be tweeting out the links to them as well, and check us out on Facebook. Check us out on YouTube and Instagram as well. The link for all our social media is basically /SempreMilancom, so it's easy to find now. And I'd like to thank you for joining me again, AJ. Hopefully you keep enjoying your new shirt. Will you wear it tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll probably wear it to work tomorrow. I'll probably take it off right now since I put it on for this, and then I'll wear it to work tomorrow. I wore my Andre Silva jersey today to work, so I'll probably get yelled at, but it is what it is.
You don't have to wear a uniform or anything.
No, we changed it up. We used to have to, and then it's became like business casual, and then after that it was we could also wear jeans, and now it's like and then it was you could wear anything on Friday, and then after that I was like, yeah, just don't look like shit. So now it's no big deal.
So don't wear an intershirt, basically.
Right, exactly.
Yes, get in. Had to get that in there. Yes, so brilliant. Thank you for joining me, mate, and thank you to everyone for listening in again. Good little hour-long episode here, which is good. And we'll hopefully be back for a podcast on Monday, maybe Tuesday, sometime next week, where we'll review the two games and look ahead to our future fixtures. So hopefully you'll join us then. And thank you for listening, and goodbye.